You're listening to the Pandemic Podcast. We equip you to live the most real life possible, face today's crises. My name is Matt Bodker, and I'm joined with my one good friend, Dr. Stephen Kissler, an epidemiologist at the Harvard School of Public Health. How are you doing this fine, wonderful August Monday?
Hello.
Crazy there?
Yeah, actually, no, it's cooling off. It's almost, there's been these weird days lately where it almost is starting to feel like fall, which is really throwing me for a loop. I know. It's like, it's crazy, but it's one of those days today, and Yeah, it's nice, it's comfortable, but it's also kind of weird.
Yeah. Well, that might be a really good theme for today's episode.
Yeah.
Weird stuff coming on. But I know my wife cannot stand it after the 4th of July when all the back to school sales begin, because she's like, it's not school time yet. It's not fall time yet. Don't put that in my face. Yeah. I want to enjoy the summer sales. So we saw a couple leaves look like a little fallish here. I know it's a little premature. We're like, no. Come on, hold strong.
Yep.
Let's have a late fall. So, man, to the hard problems of the U.S. There is a lot going on this week. And before we get into that, the normal stuff. So please leave a review. We've got a couple. It's been great. It inspires us. If you can, go on Apple Podcasts, leave one. We greatly appreciate that. But we'd love for your support, financial support, any way possible to keep this going, to help us keep the lights on, as little as $5 a month at patreon.com/pandemicpodcast, or just one-time gift at PayPal, Venmo, all in the show notes. You can grab it right then and there. So let's get into it, Stephen. When we were kind of chatting before we were recording, I was asking you what's been going on. You're like, oh man, it's been a crazy week. And it depends on what. It could be thematic to our podcast, or it could just be a crazy week in general for you. But this one seems to be very much right in line with what we talk about. And so let's just tip off what's been going on in your world, what's been kind of put onto your lap, and what are you guys seeing over there with this past week? There's been a lot of weird stuff going on and some big news cycles that have been thrown in my face a couple of times, even against kind of what we talk about. So take it away on this.
Yeah, totally. It's been an eventful week for sure. So, I mean, I think, you know, the big thing is we had the CDC stating new mask recommendations for basically everyone who's indoors, whether or not you're vaccinated, especially if you are in a area of high transmission. They did that citing some evidence that the Delta variant in particular may be transmissible among people who are vaccinated. Then a couple of days later, they released a report on the data that they had based those recommendations off of, which primarily was this cluster of infections in Provincetown, which is a town here in Massachusetts. So it's just up the road. And I think we'll probably spend some time getting into all the details there. But it's been really interesting because there's been the CDC itself updating guidelines, and there's been the response from all across the spectrum as to whether or not they should have done that and how they should have done that. And, you know, that hasn't necessarily fallen into the traditional camps where, you know, some people who have been generally supportive of recent CDC measures have been more critical and vice versa. And then in addition to it all, you know, just the question of, you know, whether it's founded, whether this makes sense to do, how they did it, whether it made sense to update the guidelines before releasing the data or if they should have done it in the reverse order. And then all of the news cycles that have come off of that, where there have been, you know, articles reporting, you know, bits and fragments of this report, headlines that don't really reflect what's in the articles, but then, you know, cause a lot of concern and confusion around what's actually happening. But it also makes sense because we're all a little bit confused and trying to figure out what's happening. So it's just been a busy week to be an epidemiologist.
Yeah, I know. Just when, what, I was like 2 weeks ago, you were telling me, oh, you know, things have been slowing down and, you know, our focus is finally being kind of switched from COVID focused. And now you're like right back in it again.
Yeah. Famous last words.
Totally. So let's jump into this because this has been concerning me. And I have another question that I've talked to you about. We'll maybe come back and circle back with that question. But this Provincetown thing has really kind of made me a little uneasy of like, because number one, I didn't even know about it until somebody did a Facebook post who somebody I don't know, don't consider a friend, very large conspiracy theorist throwing it in kind of the public's face. Like, see, this is just, you know, basically, if you want to get the gist of it, in Stephen, you can get all the dot the I's and cross the T's and this kind of stuff. But basically that there was a large amount of infections and like 77% of them or 73%, something like that. In the 70s, those who were infected were actually people who were vaccinated. So the majority of people during this time frame like on July 7th, the 14th or something like that, the majority of them who were infected were actually vaccinated people, which just was alarming because, and we might try to figure out ways by which this could be possible. And then I just read another one. This was, I think, this morning or yesterday. Then it's just like, okay, now two of these is really making me kind of a little nervous of what's going on. There was 21 of 29 people that tested, who tested positive for COVID-19 after an Oregon family reunion. So there was 21 of 29. That's one thing. And of that, 13 of those were vaccinated people, right? So that's another one that seems to, at some level, kind to ring true to the Provincetown. So what are you guys talking about? What's going on? Is this a sign that the vaccinations are having a difficult time working, or is it actually creating more havoc with infections? What's, how are you guys trying to make sense of this?
Oh boy. Yeah. So there's a lot of different factors that are playing into this, and I'll try to tick down them one by one. So first, let's maybe focus on Provincetown and sort of thinking about the context, what happened there, what we know, what we don't know, what we're still trying to figure out. So first of all, the outbreak, the cluster of infections in Provincetown is largely traceable back to the 4th of July weekend. And Provincetown is a place where a lot of people in the Boston metropolitan area and even across New England go on the 4th of July. It's like a very big destination for July 4th. So a lot of people there, a lot of people in close proximity with each other. It was raining that whole weekend, so a lot of people who might have spent time outdoors were driven indoors. So a lot of opportunities for spread, many, many opportunities for spread. So that's one thing. So if you were to expect a cluster of COVID cases anywhere in the country over the July 4th weekend, you know, I might well put my money on Provincetown. Maybe I'm biased being a Massachusetts resident right now, but it makes some sense that there was a cluster there. Now, I'm still sort of sifting through the data on this, but I know there've been a number of tweets by Ashish Jha, for example, who's a very well-renowned epidemiologist and a doctor. And he's been, one of the things that he cited is that, you know, we've had this cluster of cases, which has been alarming, but also it seems like that, in his words, it's largely sort of fizzled out, where you would expect if a big cluster of Delta cases emerged in an unvaccinated population that it would just, you know, skyrocket. But actually, you know, here in Massachusetts, thankfully, we have very high vaccination rates, and it seems like that might have helped sort of tamp down the fire, which is very good news. So that's all there. But I think it's worth sort of digging into some of this a little bit further, because, you know, I think that a lot of people remain sort of confused and uncertain about sort of how to make all of the different pieces line up. And frankly, I'm still working on this too. You know, we as epidemiologists are trying to make sense of all of the data that's coming out and trying to sort of reconcile everything with each other, because it seems like it's giving us sort of a very mixed picture. So, you know, one of the things that people have found most alarming is that, and this was the subject of a lot of the headlines in the immediate aftermath of the outbreak, or at least of this report that was published by the CDC, which is that an estimated 75% of the cases were in vaccinated people. Okay, so what does that mean? You know, that almost makes it sounds like the vaccines were actively harming you in a way, right? Because you actually have, you know, more than 50% of the cases that you observe are in people who are vaccinated. Well, so it's not necessarily that simple. So one of the thought experiments that I like to do is that, you know, imagine you have a community where you have 100% vaccination rates, but we know the vaccines are not 100% effective at stopping infection. So you do have a cluster of cases there. What fraction of those cases are going to be in vaccinated people? 100% of them are going to be in vaccinated people, right? So if you have a place with very high vaccination rates, you naturally expect greater and greater proportions of those cases to belong to vaccinated people. So that's not necessarily surprising that we see a lot of cases among vaccinated people, because if there is an outbreak and the outbreak occurs in a highly vaccinated community, then you expect a lot of those cases to be in vaccinated people. One of the things that, you know, certainly I'm still trying to sort out here is that, you know, here in Massachusetts, we do have pretty high vaccination rates. And it's, you know, on the order of, you know, for people over the age of 18, it's about 75% vaccination rates. So if you assume that the people who have been sort of infected in this cluster so far were reflective of that 75%, then it is a little bit odd that we would see, you know, 75% of the cases be in vaccinated people in a place with 75% vaccination rates, because that would suggest that maybe actually the vaccine is providing less protection against infection than we initially thought. You would expect that number to be skewed a little bit, where there would be at least fewer cases in the vaccinated population than the unvaccinated population relative to the baseline vaccination rates. So that then gets into the issues with, so there are a couple of different ways that we could explain that potentially. So one of them is that maybe amongst the people who have been infected so far, actually vaccination rates are much higher than the state average. That would make sense. Here in the Boston metropolitan area, vaccination rates are actually quite a bit higher than the Massachusetts average. So maybe there were actually, you know, if vaccination rates were 90, 95%, then that 75% no longer becomes as surprising. There could be a bias in case ascertainment, where people who are vaccinated might be more likely to comply with public health officials, might be more likely to report their cases, things like that. And so that might also bias case ascertainment towards vaccinated people. And so those are all things that we're looking into. But of course, we can't throw out the fact that we might have learned something new about the Delta variant here too, or about some descendant of it, where, you know, it does seem like the Delta variant, you know, we've known for sure that it's extremely infectious. And I think that we were going to talk in a little while about some of the data coming out from Israel too, that suggests that, you know, it might be chipping away at some level of the vaccine protection as well, especially protection against infection, even if it remains pretty effective against severe disease. So, you know, as the Delta variant continues to spread, we're learning a lot more about it. And I think the big question about this outbreak is that, you know, what exactly is it telling us? The trick when we see sort of a single big outbreak like this is that there are all of these different axes in play, where there's behavior during the outbreak, there's behavior after the outbreak. There are a lot of uncertainties as to sort of what the baseline situation was in terms of vaccination rates and who was there, what their age distribution was. And then we layer on top of it the fact that we're dealing with a relatively new variant that we're still trying to learn about. So there's a lot of uncertainty here. And so I think really what I want to emphasize is that I've even been frustrated with some of the ways, you know, not only the media has been portraying this, but even, you know, even other epidemiologists and experts in the field, or at least tangential experts, you know, people who have sort of weighed in on epidemiology over the course of this thing, but might not have sort of the full grounding in epidemiology, or even people who do, who I think are trying to, you know, in good faith to explain their perspective on what's happening. But I think that what that can gloss over is that this is a really complex situation, and it's okay to be confused. I am a little bit confused, and I'm personally, I'm sort of suspending my judgment as to sort of what's happening in this outbreak. And I don't want to say that to, you know, sow alarm or concern that, you know, we have this like crazy new variant on our hands, but I do think that it's prudent in this case to say that, you know, this is a new important piece of information that we've gotten in. It's a little bit difficult to square all the corners on it, to figure out, you know, what exactly is going on. That it's still, you know, highly probable that this is just Delta being Delta, and that it was in a very anomalous situation in a sort of strange community, in the sense that, you know, Massachusetts has high vaccination rates and we don't really know who was there. But that said, you know, we're going to have to see sort of how this plays out in the next few weeks and months to sort of see what, to try to disentangle some of these different factors. So, you know, I love to be able to explain things clearly and concisely and to sort of help people sift through all of the difficulty here. And I think we'll continue to in the coming weeks for sure. But I think really what I want to say right now is that this is, it's complex. And yeah, so it makes sense to be paying attention to all of this and to not necessarily have a clear place to stand yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, first of all, thanks. I mean, thank you for your honesty. I mean, just to acknowledge that you don't really know what's going on, and kind of giving us all the right to be able to feel the same thing. If an epidemiologist of Harvard School of Public Health, it can be perplexed, and we have the right to be perplexed as well, and not feel like we have to either go on one side or the other, where there's the one side by which I'm seeing that they're using the Massachusetts study to prove conspiracy theories. And there's the other side, which I think is more pronounced, and maybe in some sense can be a little bit more dangerous, because I think it's so much easier to dismiss the conspiracy theory. So I guess it depends on what camp you're a part of, right? But then there's the other side, which I'm seeing is this almost, even I read it the past week, a lot of articles, I felt as if they're going above and beyond to justify that this is normal, this is okay, this is to be expected. And I get that, but I felt like there was a little sense of artificial reassurance being said, like, yeah. and thank you for just saying, like, look, both sides might be kind of erring on the side of like trying to like defend their position.
Right.
And this is just a perplexing case. And so I want to kind of encapsulate this again. So I want to like give a potential reason why this might be happening and then reopen a new door with you of another level of complexity that you shared with off the air. So you just mentioned that study from Israel that I saw. I sent it to you, Stephen, the Wall Street Journal. I'll put it in the show notes. And it talked about how, you know, before all this happened, you know, when the vaccine Pfizer, Moderna rolled out, it was 95-94%, you know, effective against infection, right? And that was an incredible rate. And we're really excited about that. And this study presents itself saying, because the Delta variant, I'm assuming, and maybe all the variants together, that Israel's shown that the particularly, I didn't see which one it was, this is Pfizer, is 39% effective at reducing the risk of infection, right? 30, that's a huge dramatic jump. And then 40% effective at reducing the risk of symptomatic disease. So this may feel like, okay, we're getting a little nervous, getting a little scared. I mean, the good news is that still at the same level, the vaccine was 91% effective at preventing severe illness, which you were talking about. So I could see this part as making sense a little bit. In my mind, you kind of gave some of the situation with Provincetown, you know, me being vaccinated, I'm more willing to go out and quote risk and go do normal things, right? Because I'm vaccinated. So I feel like almost like, is it Malcolm Gladwell, the tipping point? Is there like this like tipping point, like when a vaccine is 95% effective against infection, people going out and doing things once they're vaccinated probably doesn't have a dramatic change on infection. But at some point in time, when it gets whittled away, 90, 85, 70, 60, 50, there's a tipping point by which, okay, now between the combination of behavior and its reduced effectiveness, they're like almost like a floodwaters, right? When it comes to infection, open up. I'm assuming that could probably make sense of some of this. Is that what you were thinking as well?
Yeah, totally. So to sort of break some of that open and just to be sort of totally precise with my words here. So the early, you know, the trials for the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, the reported efficacies at 94-95% was the efficacy against symptomatic disease, not necessarily against infection. So the efficacy against infection was probably somewhat lower, on the order of 70-80%. But nevertheless, what you say, you know, is true, that these data coming from Israel are really important, because as you said, it seems like the efficacy against both infection and symptomatic illness is reduced to around 40% in the data set that they're looking at. So either way, that's a drop off from what we had been observing before. Now, this study, as the authors were, you know, very upfront about, and also the article in the Wall Street Journal is very upfront about, is that it's preliminary, it's a relatively small group, has not been peer reviewed. You know, we still need a lot of checks and balances on this before we can really conclude anything for sure about this. But, you know, that said, it does also kind of align with these increasing reports of vaccinated people coming down with symptomatic disease in the face of the Delta. And so these numbers are going to absolutely, you know, shift over time as we learn more about the Delta. Furthermore, you know, there's not only are we learning more about the Delta, but we're also learning more about the vaccines themselves. So one of the things that was brought up in this article, and that I think we need to continue thinking about, is that it's very well possible, and in fact probable, that immunity wanes over time. This is a pretty well documented phenomenon that happens with other coronaviruses. It happens with flu. It happens with many different infectious diseases, where the strength of our immunity can decline over time. Now, part of the reason why the Pfizer and Moderna shots are in a two-dose series is to sort of help shore up that decline, to try to keep it higher for longer. But a lot of the talk about introducing potentially a third dose into that sequence is because maybe we need it to maintain those levels of protection. You know, that's not unprecedented. There are a lot of vaccines that we get, especially as kids, where we have a 3 or 4 dose series. And the entire purpose of that is because it takes that many doses for our immune response to go up to a durable level and protect us for life. And that way may well be true for COVID-19 as well. Israel, of course, has extremely high vaccination rates. but also, you know, they were very quick to the draw. And so many of the people who have been vaccinated there have been vaccinated for a while. So some of this might reflect the Delta variant. Some of it might also reflect waning immunity from the vaccine over time. And so once again, there's a lot of these different factors in play that we can't quite disentangle until we observe these kinds of studies in different populations at different times so that we can figure out, you know, what exactly is contributing to what. So absolutely important information. It's just not totally clear what to do with it yet.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. That's great. So let's add a level of complexity to this because, okay, so you added another additional level of complexity, understanding the situation. We talked about how, you know, it kind of makes sense if these preliminary studies are correct and it's now only 40% effective on maybe, you know, symptomatic disease and people are being a little bit more risky. So we can see these large amounts. However, you mentioned, and I didn't even know about this before we started the podcast, that Florida is seeing a pretty significant uptick in hospitalization. So that's like another level, you know, so seeing Pfizer being at 91% effective. Now, I'm not sure what it was beforehand, if it was like 95 or 96, I don't know when it comes to that level. That seems maybe like that's a hard narrative that I'm not being able to explain right now in light of the efficacy of Pfizer, Moderna. And you were telling me that Florida is a place that's generally well vaccinated, so you maybe wouldn't really expect to have such an uptick. So do you want to talk about what you've seen with Florida and how that's causing a whole maybe another mess of complexity and perplexity as well?
Yeah, so exactly. So, you know, we're starting to see, you know, pretty substantial increases in cases in a number of states, you know, particularly Florida and some of the southern Midwestern states, like Florida, Louisiana, Arkansas, Missouri, have recently had among the highest per capita case counts in the country. Now, as you mentioned, you know, some of those states have relatively low vaccination rates, and so we might not be particularly surprised. But actually, you know, Florida has decently high vaccination rates, you know, especially relative to their surrounding community and even relative to the national average. So Florida is an interesting case in this sense where you have, you know, relatively high vaccination rates and we do have cases that are increasing pretty quickly. And probably most concerningly, you know, hospitalizations are rising there as well. And so it's, again, sort of, you know, we're trying to make sense of this. So it's, once again, there are a couple of things that could be in play. So As before, so Florida was one of the few states in the country that had a larger summer surge last year than their winter surge. And we think that some of that might have to do with the fact that, you know, up here in Massachusetts and certainly in Colorado, we think about summer as the time that you spend outdoors and winter as the time that you spend indoors. But that's kind of flipped there where, you know, it gets so hot in the summer that you spend more time indoors. And the winter is actually when it's, you know, pretty pleasant to be, you know, hanging out in Florida. And so, you know, some of this surge could be behaviorally driven. We do expect cases to rise around this time of year if it reflects at all what happened last year, particularly in Florida, but also in some of the other southern states. But I think, again, you know, the thing that we're trying to reconcile here is that the trajectory of hospitalizations in Florida seems to differ from the trajectory of at least the relationship between cases and deaths, for example, that we saw in the UK. So I think one of the things that we talked about last week was this really remarkable difference in the previous two waves in the UK, where they had their winter surge, and then they've had this more recent summer surge that was really driven by the Delta variant, where in, you know, the winter, you can sort of calculate the factor of cases that lead to deaths. And then in this most recent surge, really in the post-vaccination period, that trend sort of broke apart, where there were far fewer deaths per case. That seems to be totally as a result of vaccine coverage, which is great. And so, you know, I was expecting to see something much like that here. It may well still play out because it's still too soon to sort of carry cases forward into mortality data. We haven't really had this surge of Delta long enough for it to really cause an uptick in deaths if it's going to do so. But we're definitely seeing a rise in hospitalizations. So one of the questions that's remaining here, you know, I wasn't able to find data on hospitalizations in the UK, which is really what I would want to be able to compare to here. But part of the question is, you know, the vaccine can provide protection at many different stages of illness. It can prevent you from getting infected. It can prevent you from getting symptoms. It can prevent you from going to the hospital. It can prevent you from going to the critical care, and it can prevent you from dying. And it's not really clear, you know, what is the efficacy of the vaccine at each of those stages. So it may well, you know, there may well still be people going to hospital, but it might be doing a very good job at preventing people from dying, even if they do end up needing care in the hospital. I think it's still sort of too soon to see if, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll still see cases spike, but actually the deaths will remain very low, especially in places with high vaccine coverage. But we're again in this super unsatisfying position where it's kind of too soon to tell what exactly that's going to look like. I'm hopeful that we will still see far fewer deaths per case in this surge than we did before. And I think that, you know, looking at some of the experience of other countries around the world with the Delta variant, there's good reason to believe that that will be true. But I think it's something we're going to have to watch very closely, because if that does not turn out to be the case, then that's, you know, another thing we're going to have to figure out, you know, what is going on there. Is it a difference in the virus itself? Is it a difference in our behavior? Is it a difference in, you know, the time that it's taken between when we've gotten the shot and when we've gotten infected? All of these things are in play, and we're going to have to put all of those on the table when we're sort of reconciling the different experiences that we've had with this particular variant of the virus all around the world.
Good. That's helpful. And just a quick caveat, it's one of our Facebook private groups said hello back. I don't know who you are, because I don't think you hit the accept button to know who it actually is, but it's one of our members from our private support group. So thank you for watching. It's awesome to have a couple of viewers right now. Let's continue on to a question I had that it's not quite as relevant as it was maybe last week, but still kind of relevant. I mentioned this to you because I was like thinking in my head, I'm like, okay, last week we said, hey, infections are going up, but hospitalizations are still really low. And we also kind of saw that at that point in time, we were saying, oh, 90% of the people who are being infected were unvaccinated, and only 10% were vaccinated. And so then my mind, like, oh, initially, it doesn't really make sense, because if 90% of the people being infected yet hospitalizations are low, then you think there'll only be like a 10% decrease because of those who are being infected are vaccinated. It took me a few minutes to kind of reverse engineer that. And I thought, oh, you know, because some of our listeners could be struggling the same way. Like, that doesn't make sense. And I want to throw this back to you, just make sure that my mental gymnastics were obviously correct. That, okay, so it is the fact that even though only 10% of the people at that point in time, right, we don't know now because we got some new studies showing up, right, last week, were vaccinated. But it's the very nature of the population of the vaccination, because before the vaccination, everyone was susceptible whatsoever, including the immune compromised, those who had comorbidities, all these kind of things. And of course, those people who signed up for the vaccine, probably the majority of them, those early adopters were those who were at the greatest risk. So right, that population pool has been taken away largely. Is that how those statistics kind of make sense?
Right, exactly. So, I mean, and that's one of the things for sure is, you know, vaccination rates are especially much higher amongst people over the age of 65, who are much more likely to go to hospital in the first place. And so we have this whole gradient where, you know, if we just look at the average vaccination rates and we look at average vaccine efficacy, we can really miss a lot of the picture, because we've so far done a very good job of protecting the people who are most likely to go to hospital in the first place. So, which is a good thing. Yeah.
Great. So let's land here, because we've talked about all the true stuff, the stats, the data. We've acknowledged there's a large sense of perplexity going on. So what do we do with this? Like, how do we land this plane? Because the CDC has given us some guidelines, right? It's up to states to impose that or not impose that. So here we are, individuals listening to this, maybe a little concerned of what's coming down the pipeline next week or three. How do you feel like we should be engaging on level of prudence when we're saying, hey, the conspiracy theorists clearly we think are way off the mark. And we even say those people who are trying to radically confirm that everything is normal, don't worry, all is going to plan, might be a little bit too intense, that we need to hold this middle ground. What does that mean for us going forward in my day-to-day grocery shopping, going out and seeing friends? Should I change on any level or modify my behavior because of this time of complexity?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's, you know, a number of different principles that we need to put in play here, where, you know, one of them is the principle of prudence or caution, where, you know, we're not sure what's, you know, how exactly or if substantially the game has changed against the virus. There's some evidence to suggest that it might have, but I wanted to bring up, you know, on the other hand, it remains true that, you know, as you said, the great majority of people who are being admitted to hospital with COVID are unvaccinated. So that's another piece of evidence that we have to square on the other side of the camp, where it's like, it does seem pretty clear that certainly being vaccinated reduces your odds of going to the hospital on this very large scale. So if you're not vaccinated yet, it does still make sense to get vaccinated. That remains the best, you know, the best tool that we know of that we have available for preventing the most severe outcomes from COVID and even reducing its spread. I think that continuing to wear masks while indoors whenever possible makes a lot of sense. That was something that I've more or less kept up throughout all of the changing guidance, but I think especially now it makes sense, because if this, you know, if Delta is going to continue to spread, it's mainly going to be spreading in indoor crowded spaces. So trying to reduce your exposure to large crowds, trying to reduce certainly your unmasked exposure indoors, makes an awful lot of sense, especially if you're in a place where cases are spiking right now. I do think that it makes a lot of sense to, you know, pay attention to the local COVID weather, where that can really adjust our behavior, because, you know, certainly in places with a lot of spread, I would urge a much higher degree of caution. Whereas in places where cases are remaining relatively low, I think that, you know, not a lot really needs to change at the moment. We should continue paying attention to the data that's coming in, sort of suspending our judgment about what's happening and, you know, informing ourselves as much as possible. But in places where cases aren't actively surging, I don't think that I would recommend much of a shift in behavior at the moment. But it's all totally contextual. It's all sort of associated with what your own risk budget is. And so the best I can do is say, you know, I'm generally wearing a mask indoors. I, you know, still going to the grocery store, but haven't really been indoor dining as much. Outdoor dining is wonderful right now in this part of the country, you know, so supporting local businesses, you know, a lot of people are having trouble making it through this thing. So like, you know, recognizing that like we have a formidable infectious disease on our hands and we all need to make it through this in all of the different ways we can. So I feel like I'm bringing up a lot of things that we were talking about way back at the beginning of 2020, but this sense of like, to the extent that we're able to, you know, maintaining our solidarity, recognizing that some of our actions will need to change, but not allowing that to really drive wedges between us, but instead to make sure that we're taking care of each other and, you know, living our lives to the extent that we're able, but also recognizing that there may be some necessary adjustments coming up.
Yeah. Great. I love it. You know, I'll put this in the show notes as an article just talking about the CDC recommendation and their kind of tiers, which seems a little abstract, but they break it down to basically, I again, read the article. I could be fubbing this and Stephen can, but you know, basically between 50 and 100 cases per 100,000, I think that's considered like the high level, and then above 100 is considered even higher. Those areas are, you know, recommend that you wear a mask indoors, even if vaccinated. And then there's the positivity rate, which I forgot what it was, but it's in the article. And that's a great way to kind of memorize those and use that as a kind of a baseline and just check your COVID weather, right? I think, what do you use, Stephen? It was like some like New York Times or New York something, that a great one that you can just check.
Yeah, so exactly. I mean, I think the New York Times does a good job with data visualization. And so a lot of their maps are openly accessible, even if you don't have a subscription. And so, yeah, so I've been relying on at least their data visualizations quite a bit to sort of do this. But I think the CDC is now actually providing some of these maps now as well, which is good. So
great. So check there. We can put that link in the show notes. And finally, just in on a bit of good news, because of all the Delta variant, there's been a surge in vaccinations, which has been great just to see a lot of people tipping over, I think, 700,000 at some point in time for 4 straight days. This has been great. So that's good news, hopeful news. And for those of you who are not vaccinated, please consider it. It is a safe way, and it is a great way to protect yourself and the people around you, which is mutually important. So, and help and share this podcast with other people if they're hesitant or if they're just having a tough time make that decision. Stephen and Mark do an incredible job of just showing why it's important and that it's safe. So share this podcast with people you think you may need it. Thank you all for listening. Once again, if you want to support us anywhere, that's patreon.com/pandemicpodcast, $5 a month, as well as one time Venmo, PayPal in the show notes. And if you want to get a hold of us or just send a comment or let us know what's going on in your world, matt@livingthereal.com. And I will send that on to Stephen and Mark. Have a wonderful week, you guys. We'll see you guys next Monday. Take care and bye-bye.